Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. At the end of last week's program, I said we would discuss the characters in the play Richard III today. However, the more I thought about it, I think we need to do something else first. In order to fully understand Shakespeare's Richard III, it is important that you understand the history behind the play. Now, I believe we can safely say that Shakespeare's play Richard III is great drama, but it isn't necessarily accurate history. Now, I believe that William Shakespeare bent the rules for writing history in order to craft this play in such a way to give the audience a dramatic, even epic view of what was happening within the two royal families, and that I mean by that the Lancasters and the Yorks, during the Wars of the Roses. Now, it was a truly turbulent time in English history, and when we start reading Richard III, or if you look at it on a film, it is a turbulent play. It's very fast acting, very fast paced. Of course, some modern historians, with a tendency to rewrite history, believe that Will Shakespeare broke the rules. And what I mean by that is they're very upset that Shakespeare makes him appear to be a conniving, hunchback, monstrous villain. Now, they believe his short reign of just 2 years as monarch has been forever tainted, yet there are facts of history that show while Richard was at one time a very successful soldier, and he was a very just ruler over his estates in northern England, when the door opened for him to seize the throne from his 12-year-old nephew, he did become a murderous tyrant almost overnight. Because we will be covering more of these history plays in the future, I'd like to recommend you buy a book by David Starkey titled Crown and Country, A History of England Through the Monarchy. You can locate a good copy of the book at abebooks.com. So, what I want to do for today's program, I want to give you a brief outline of the history behind the play. Today, and then when we discuss the parts of the play in upcoming programs, I'll show you where Shakespeare bends history and where he gets it right. Now, Richard was the last Plantagenet king. Now, you don't need to be afraid of that word Plantagenet, and I'll just give you a simple definition of the word. The word Plantagenet means relating to the English royal dynasty that held the throne from the accession of Henry II in 1154 until the death of Richard III in 1485. So that phrase Plantagenet is actually a family name, and it covers the royal house for nearly 3 1/3 centuries. Now, it was Richard III's father, who was the Duke of York, who was also called Richard. Now, he took that term Plantagenet as the family name from a distant relative named Geoffrey, or Joffrey, I guess you'd say. And he was the Count of Anjou, so he was French. They are related to the French, and of course they're also related to the Anglo-Saxons. But the word Plantagenet, or the name Plantagenet, was Joffrey's nickname, and where he got the nickname is he used to put a sprig of broom, and all that is a beautiful yellow flowering plant. He would put it in his cap or his hat. Now, the word Plantagenet does come from the Latin word planta genista, and it just means a flowering plant. So if you look at the heraldry of that family, you can find this plant right on their shields or right on their flags, and so it became a symbol for the family. Now, one other thing about Richard III is he was also the last English king to die in battle. And that is kind of an amazing thing. But I think the best place to really begin this background history for the play is to go all the way back to King Edward III, who reigned from 1327 to 1377. And I just want to give you a flavor of, let's say, maybe the mood or the attitude in the monarchy. And remember, this is just a whole series of relatives together. Now, Henry III would have been Richard's great-great-great-great-grandfather. So grandfather great four times. Now, Edward III was a very stable ruler. He was a warrior king, and he did win significant battles for England. If you know anything about medieval society or England at that time, they really loved their kings to be warriors, and the best warriors were considered the best kings. Now, Edward also firmly established the rules and culture of chivalry and heraldry, and what he wanted to do, there's always been this tension in England between the nobility, the aristocracy, and the monarchy. The nobility want to rule the monarchy, or the aristocracy want to have their place in the government. And essentially, some of the kings who were not considered very good kings wanted to have absolute monarchy. They wanted to be the dog. They wanted to be the head. They wanted to make all the rules, and they didn't want anyone else to do that. And so that was a problem that actually Edward III saw, and he decided to solve. And he did it by establishing this whole culture of chivalry. Now, it was a very romantic time, and he was likened to King Arthur, and I think a lot of us probably know the legends of King Arthur. There had been ladies and maidens and, you know, these handsome, you know, very masculine knights, and they would have their jousting tournaments, and they could fight, you know, well on the battlefield. And so that's what he did. Now, he did also have a problem. And the problem that he had is he had five sons. And I should say five living sons that lived to adulthood. Now, why was that a problem? Well, as you can see, maybe at the end of the Wars of the Roses, the reason why it was a problem is he created a large noble family. And these first five sons, their descendants felt they had a right to the throne. And so if there was ever a problem on the throne, they decided, well, look, I'm as good as the king. I could be king. So it really did start a problem. But he did have five sons, and his first son was named Edward. And you're going to learn that if you really study into the crowning country, is that the firstborn sons were always named after their fathers. And that gave them the right to rule. And that was almost like, the firstborn son in ancient Israel, that they received the birthright. But it's a little bit different in terms of succession of kings. But Edward was the firstborn son. He was also known as the Black Prince. Then there was another son named Lionel. Now, he was not the warrior type and was kind of a quiet man. And, he lived a very peaceful life, but he had no real desire to rule. But he did help out with the monarchy. There was another son, John of Gaunt, and he was the Duke of Lancaster. And, of course, then he is the head of the Lancaster family. And that becomes very important to really understand this Richard III. They also had another brother, Thomas of Woodstock. And Thomas did not live, he lived into adulthood, but he didn't live very long because his nephew, King Richard II, executed him when he was king, and that was, we're going to be coming up on that here in just a second or two. And then he had another son named Edmund, and he was Duke of York, or he is the head of the House of York. Now, one of the tragedies that happened with Edward III, he was a great leader. His son, Edward the Black Prince, was also considered a great leader. They really conquered a lot of country. And it was Edward III's idea to unite, you know, England and Scotland and Wales and Ireland. And he fought hard all of his life to get that all organized. And that still is a problem today. You know, the Scots really don't want to be part of, like the United Kingdom anymore. Well, that was always the problem. And Edward was the one that came up with that idea originally to unite all the islands. Now, what happened is Edward III, his son, the Black Prince, died within a year of his father's death. So So the Black Prince died on June 8, 1376. Then Edward died on June 21st, 1377, almost within a year to the day from each other. And the Black Prince's firstborn son and heir, also named Edward, had died in a battle in 1371. So this created an incredible problem for England. And the English were devastated because they had this troubled history of bad government in England when, a young boy would assume the throne and, he was not really trained. Well, essentially what happened here is Edward III's grandson, Richard II, who was still a young boy, he was next in line to become king. And he had been raised in Bordeaux, France. He was highly educated. He was not the warrior type of king that the English liked. He was very much into the arts and culture. He created the monarchy in England to look very glamorous. And this really rankled the nobility and the barons. And it caused rebellion among the common people. And it did create this ever-widening gap between the monarchy and England. In other words, Richard almost lived his life totally separated from England. It's like he was in his own world and England was in another world. And even though he lived or ruled for 22 years, his extravagant and lavish lifestyle nearly broke the economy of England. And he heavily taxed the common people. He also taxed the nobles and the aristocracy. He did not have the ability to win wars. And so what was happening is England was actually going to be falling prey to their enemies. And so he lost the support and the favor of the nobles. And actually his cousin, who was Henry Bolingbroke, or the son of John Gaunt, he decided to rebel against him. And eventually what he did is he took the... He actually deposed Richard II, and he became Henry IV in 1399. Now, many historians believe that he executed Richard II by starvation at a different castle. He didn't do it in London, and so, but he did execute him. Now, Henry IV was a very capable king. He reigned for 14 years. But when he deposed and executed Richard II, this opened the floodgates for rebellion against the crown. In other words, he committed the big taboo. He deposed the king, made himself king, and then he executed the king. And that really caused him a lot of problems. And it's the very foundation of what began this War of the Roses. And of course, we see that war really exploding at the time of Richard III, and then it's also ends at the time of Richard III. And so it's really this very turbulent history. Now, when Henry Bolingbroke was, and I'm giving you really just simple history here, but when Henry Bolingbroke took the throne from Richard II, there was a very famous family in England, and they were known as the Percys, and they helped put Bolingbroke into power. Now, they were probably the wealthiest family in England, and that was one of the problems between the monarchy and the nobles. Some of the nobles were actually more wealthy than the king. And at that time, remember, it was a feudal society, and when these nobles had these large estates, all of the peasants or the common people living on their estates were their army. And so they could, if they had large estates, they could mass large armies. The king always couldn't do that. I mean, couldn't always do that. And so it is kind of an interesting history. But the Percys thought when they put Bolingbroke into power that he would be their puppet. Well, that didn't happen. He wanted to have more absolute power. Now, Henry did work with Parliament, but he didn't want to be pushed around by the Percys. Well, when he would not submit to them, then they actually renounced him as king, and they tried to work with the common people to get them to see that maybe he should never have been king. And so through his whole reign of 14 years, he just had to fight rebellion at home, he had to fight rebellion abroad, he had to fight plots against his life, he had to fight assassination attempts, and really, I think by the time he probably died, he was really miserable that he even did what he did. But his son then, Henry V, was famous in English history, And I think a lot of people know him. There was a famous movie by Kenneth Branagh about Henry V. And what he did is he restored respect for the monarchy. He won back these lands in France. He won the famous Battle of Agincourt. What he did is he retook the French throne. Unfortunately, he died young. He only reigned for 9 years. And then again, you know, here's England back in this same problem. They're minus a good king, and essentially what happened, Henry V left his throne to his son, Henry VI, and of course they're named king as soon as their father dies, but Henry VI was only 9 months old when his father died. So that created a massive problem for England. And so, what happened is Parliament got together, and I don't want to forget this other point, is Henry VI was also king of France. So here this nine-month-old kid is king of England and king of France, and so what Parliament decided is he had a couple uncles. They put the uncles in charge of England. They put the one uncle in charge of France. They each were assigned a council to help them rule, and eventually, Henry VI was crowned king of England when he was 9. Then he was crowned king of France when he was 10. And when he was old enough, then he married Margaret, who was the daughter of the Duke of Anjou. So she was French. But remember, at this time, England did rule both England and France. Now, she was a very powerful woman. And Henry VI was really not, again, he was very much like Richard II, and even his predecessor, even Edward II, they were not very strong kings, and they weren't the warrior types. In fact, Henry was very religious, and he was really into peace and negotiation, and I'll talk to you about that here in just a few seconds. But there I've given you a lot of history in just a really few minutes, this is all really important to the play Richard III. It's really, if you just see this history coming up to this, Henry VI is in the immediate background to the play Richard III. And in fact, there was actually a lot of the tension between, Henry VI and actually Richard III's brother, Edward IV. Now, Henry V died on August 31st, 1422. And so that'll help give you the time period that we're dealing with. But if you look at Henry VI, he had the most unusual reign in England. He reigned from 1422 to 1461, and then his reign stopped. But then he reigned again from 1470 to 1471. And why is that? Well, it has everything to do with this War of the Roses, or the civil war between the Lancaster and the York families. Now, again, his contemporaries did not consider him a good king. He had uncles that were actually better at war than he was. They were trying to get him to become a warrior. That didn't work. Essentially, by the time Henry VI was 30, he lost or handed back to the French nearly all the lands his father and ancestors had fought so hard for. This shattered the English. It shattered their idea of England. It shattered their idea of the monarchy. And then when he was finally defeated at the Battle of Gascony, Henry VI suffered an emotional collapse, and he actually lapsed into insanity. And this was the year 1453. And like his French grandfather, Charles VI, he did go insane. Now, the English crown essentially was destroyed both at home and abroad. And what this did, listeners, it did open up this war or this strife between the House of York and the House of Lancaster. And when, Henry VI is a Lancaster, and the House of York began to seize their opportunity to make their bid for the throne. While Henry VI was ill, Richard, the Duke of York, who at that time was Richard III's father, he became his protector. And because at that point in 1453 he had no heir, Parliament had promised the Yorks that when Henry died, they would take over the throne and be king. But it was also that year that all of a sudden Margaret of Anjou becomes pregnant. So now he has an heir. Well, that greatly disturbed the Yorks because they felt they were promised to have the throne. So essentially what happens, there's this intense internal struggle, and it does cause this civil war. And so you have Richard, the Duke of York, on one side, and then you have Henry VI's wife, Margaret. She's on the other side, so Margaret's fighting for the House of Lancaster. The Duke of York is fighting for the Yorkians. And as I've said probably so many times before, or maybe I should say I've heard said so many times before, if the English weren't fighting the enemy, they were fighting with each other. So essentially, they begin to fight, and there's this internal struggle. In 1460, York was killed at the Battle of Wakefield, but his son, who was named Edward, he continued the struggle, and he defeated the Lancastrians at the Battle of Towton. And when York won, young York, or York's son, won the Battle of Towton, he crowned himself Edward IV. And essentially what happened is Henry VI then fled into exile, leaving Margaret to sort things out. Now, just as an aside, the Battle of Towton is considered the bloodiest battle ever fought on English soil. And 28,000 soldiers died that day. And it was just an amazingly bloody battle. The rivers close to the battlefield just ran red with blood for days. Now, Henry VI's French wife, Margaret, you know, you have to understand, she was more the warrior than he was, and her skill in leading armies upset the English nobles. She was considered a real threat because she was French, and she was successful in bringing Henry VI back to the throne in 1470 with the help of the Earl of Warwick, who had switched sides in the battle. And this Earl of Warwick in English history, he was really called the Kingmaker. And so he had originally supported Henry IV, but then he didn't like what Henry IV was doing, so they defeated him, and then Edward IV went into exile, and essentially then Henry VI was brought back to being king, but then he lapsed back into apathy, and then eventually what happened, the Yorks, with Edward IV, he came out of exile, he rallied this army. He defeated the Lancastrians at the Battle of Tewkesbury in 1471. And those are very famous battles that you need to understand in this War of the Roses. So essentially, where we are in the play, Richard III, it's just not long after this Battle of Tewkesbury. And Edward IV takes the throne back. So in some ways, these two kings were actually fighting each other, you know, for several years. But Edward IV is Richard III's older brother. And when we hear Richard talking in the play, or the very first opening scene of the play, when he's speaking to us, it's the only Shakespeare play to begin with a soliloquy. And Richard is talking about how great it is that the Yorks have just won this battle. His brother is back on the throne. And so that's where we are when the play opens. And essentially, we're taken right into this time period. And then this play then leads us to the last battle of the War of the Roses, or the Battle of Bosworth Field. So next time, what we will do is we'll discuss the characters in Richard III, and I know that what we have to say you'll find very exciting. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. That's my email address for this radio program. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. And you can also find JBL on Facebook. That address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.